tell us about spin chains on metallic surfaces, condo destruction and magnetic order disorder transitions.
So thank you. So I'd like to start thanking the organizers. So Emily, Ribou, Shailish, I don't see how he is. And Roger's not in somehow. He's still, he's an organizer, right? Roger Melko?
Yeah, he's coming.
So who cares, right? So, well, not who cares, I'm sorry, it's not good. Good, so this is work on the spin chains on metallic surfaces, and this is condo physics. Huh? And I'd like to see condo physics from the perspective of a U1 gauge theory, and we'll see what happens. So I'll actually start with experiments. I don't do this very often, and maybe this is not the best place to do it, but I'll do it. I'll start with experiments and go from experiments to models which really work out for this experiment, and then to this U1 gauge theory of seeing the condo, and we can learn, in my opinion, can learn a lot of it from it. And then this is work which is, you know, we have a sign problem. We have many problems, right? But the sign problem is certainly one of them. And so what we're trying to do is to build, it's a system where there's a dimensional mismatch and you have a spin chain, right? So it's a one-dimensional object on a two-dimensional surface. And depending upon how you choose the surface to be a Dirac system, then you get some interesting condo breakdown transition. So this morning, condo breakdown was killing the Fermi surface, was killing something, I forgot what, but we were killing. And so so this is the condo breakdown, and so there is parallel to this, although the spins are sub-intensive, so that makes a big difference. And then also, if you use a full Fermi surface, which of course for us has to be nested to get rid of the sign problem, then you see that there will be, there's dissipation which will induce long-range magnetic order, and also condo physics will be also there. And so what you get here is an order disorder magnetic transition in a metal, right? So that's, for us, is something pretty nice. Of course, there's a dimensional mismatch, as I said before. And this, I think, in Senthil's terminology would be some mutilation of the Fermi surface. So here's a breakdown where part of the Fermi, some particles drop out of the Vlachinger volume, whereas here maybe there's a reformation of the Fermi surface. So that's the way I understood his terminology anyways. So here, before I start, here are the people. So this is the group of people who are working in Würzburg, all on numerics. That's all we do. Bim Ladanu is the one who did a lot of the calculations for the condo. Sihong Liu is also involved partly in some condo physics also. Marcin Rakowski is a long-term collaborator. We have worked a lot on condo with him, and then Toshiro Sato has also worked on frustration effects in condo systems. So I'm just, you know, telling you what the part of the group who's doing condo physics. And all this would not have happened without Tarun Grover, who's always, well, we all know Tarun, so it's fantastic to talk to him. Matthias Voita also, who helped us a lot, especially for those condo breakdown transitions. And then for dissipation, right, so we ran into trying to understand dissipative systems, and then Manuel Weber and David Lewitz came in with a beautiful algorithm to be able to simulate spin systems with retarded interactions, right? So that will come up. So let me start with the experiment. The experiments are really, you take a metal, right? So copper, you put in, there is a decoupling layer of copper nitride, I think, and then you put in cobalt atoms on top of it. Now, cobalt has a spin 3/2, but of course on a surface, on the atom, you have spin orbit coupling. So spin is not a good quantum number anymore. And so these terms, like a single ion azotropy, are symmetry at least allowed. And so why it's positive, I don't know. But at least it's symmetry allowed. And what it does is basically it splits. There's a 3/2 doublet here, which is split off, which is higher energy than the spin 1/2 doublet. Time reversal symmetry is present. That means that this doublet is degenerate. And that's what you need, of course, then for condo systems. And so you can place this, this cobalt atom on this surface, do STM through the cobalt atom. That's very important. So you pass some current through the cobalt atom, and you get this very nice condo resonance. And you can split it by putting in a magnetic field. So the physics we're going to look at is basically on this energy scale, right? So that all the models we're looking at is on this energy scale. And it's so this is the model which captures the physics. This would be then our Fermi liquid, so basically the conduction electron, so this copper surface. Then we have this spin 1/2 degree of freedom, which captures this doublet here, this the spin 1/2 plus or minus 1/2. And then there's a spin flip or condo coupling to the conduction electrons, which are, you know, located, you know, on the same unit cell, if you want, of the spin, and then we have a magnetic field. So we can do some calculations. I'll come back to all these complicated things later, but we can do some calculations which within this Kondo lattice model where we have no charge fluctuations, really describe those virtual processes if you start from an Anderson model of passing current through this Kondo dot. And you get this very nice Kondo resonance. So that's not so surprising. This is rather old stuff, but then what you can experimentally do is to build those chains, right? You can build those chains up to 9. That's the maximum I've seen for the moment in those experiments, up to chains of 9 cobalt atoms. And as a function of, these are basically DIDV curves as a function of voltage bias, and this is a magnetic field. And you see a set of site-dependent field-induced Kondo resonances. So there's a lot of information in this. I'm not going to go through this. The only thing I'd like to do is just show off and show that we can come up with a model where we have to put in now a Heisenberg interaction between the cobalt atoms. And if you choose, if Bimla chooses the right parameters, then we can really reproduce the experiment. So yes. Is that was a question? I don't see you actually because there's too much light. Yeah. Yeah. It's a very early to ask a question. This goes on her time, right? On my time.
So shouldn't that Heisenberg term be more of an emergent interaction?
No.
I mean, like, shouldn't it be mediated by the
They're too far away, the experimentalists tell me. They're just too far away.
Oh. Okay,
and it depends. It's really complicated. I think it's really complicated. I agree. In the normal case, you would say RKKY, it's dynamically generated,
yes,
and you have no way to put it in. But that's not the case here.
So this
right?
R and R prime are
our nearest neighbors.
On the cobalt.
Right. So that really comes. I think that really comes out. That's why I chose this experiment because, yeah. So this is really something which you. So this is the result, and this motivates us to you know, this. If you want more details, you can go into this paper and look at all this. So the question we will ask is, you know, try to, instead of being in chains which are open and have no translation symmetry, we could build rings or we could make chains with periodic boundary conditions, and this is what we have in mind. So how do we do, this is our model, right, which has really some reality, and I would like to go to numerical simulations and also the classification of phases which you can get in these models. So so this is maybe a bit pedestrian, but you know, this is how we set up our Monte Carlo, because the way we deal with spins is very contrived, you know? Because we would like to couple spins to fermions and get no time problems. So what we have to do is to use an Abrikosov representation of the spin, and of course we have, this is only valid if you have the constraint of exactly f dagger f is equal to 1. And then we work in a Hilbert space where this constraint is not taken into account, and we impose this constraint energetically. Huh? So what we do, we forget about the constraint, and we put in a big Hubbard U here in the Hamiltonian so as to impose it, as I said again, energetically. And you can go through the mass, but essentially this term here is just this V of R, V dagger of R, like this, and this V is essentially the hybridization matrix element between the C and the Fs, and this D is here. This is basically what you need for to get the Heisenberg. So this is an exact, there's nothing very, very, this is just exact, basically Affleck-Marson way of doing spin systems. And the constraint works out very nicely because H of U commutes with the Hamiltonian, so the double occupancy will decay exponentially, and you can, before you do the calculation, you can predict that it's going to crash down with this law, and it works. So we're doing pretty good. Now, to go to the U1 field theory or gauge theory, what we do is we decouple this, to decouple this, we need a complex variable. To decouple this, we need a complex variable on a bond. This is also somehow on a bond between the what I call the F electron and the conduction electron, and we need here, so this is chi for the Heisenberg term, and we need a scalar field A0, it's a real field for the double occupancy. And so the partition function, so this is, you know, I'll go through this quickly because I'm sure you know all this, this is essentially what we have to integrate over all those Hubbard-Chertanovich fields, the fermions, and our action is given by this, okay? So you recognize, of course, a local U1 gauge symmetry, which this is only, of course, for the limit U going to infinity. For the limit U going to infinity, we have a U1 U1 gauge theory. So everything is invariant if you multiply your F with this phase. And so This is actually exactly what we do on the computer, right? What we do on the computer is precisely this. We will trace out the fermions here to get a determinant, a fermion determinant, and then we will use Monte Carlo to sum over all those gauge theories, gauge fields, right? The Zs, the Bs, and also the Hubbard-Chertanovich things. Now, in the case, if you take this Tij to be particle hole symmetric, so that's half filling essentially with hopping between A and B sublattice, then you can, and if the spin system is non-frustrated, then you can show that this the action here is real, and you get no sign problem, and you can integrate, you know, you can do the integration rather efficiently with Monte Carlo sampling. So that's exactly the way we this is what goes into the computer, and it may be useful to understand all the physics on the basis of this U1 gauge theory. So here is, you know, it's, we just, you know, this is easier said than done. We have, you recognize Emily here, you recognize Johannes, who are both in the audience. We've been working on a program package, which is called ALF, Algorithms for Lattice Fermions. And, you know, so it's complicated. You can download it, and, you know, all the know-how we have is, for the moment, plugged into this program package. I won't say anything more about that because that's it. So now about the phases. Okay, so we have this action, and we can start looking at classifying the phases we have. So the easiest one is the breaking the global SU2 symmetry, and so this is essentially condensing this object. And you know, you would have an SDW. You could also have an SDW star, where you condense this, right? But the gauge field stays deconfined, okay? So that would be what we would call an SDW star. I mean, if you have a Z2 gauge theory, that would be okay. So numerically, of course, this is something which we can't calculate. We calculate correlation functions of this, and if they're long range, then we have some broken global symmetry. So this is for SDW, this one and this one. Then we have also the possibility, I said, of confined and deconfined phases. The hardest thing for us to precisely pin down is the Kondo, right? Kondo is something which is hard to, you know, the question you could ask yourself is, find me some type of observable which you measure which tells you there is Kondo, which is happening. It's not so easy, and this is what I'd like to dwell upon a bit. So if you go to the mean field theory, right, if you just go and look at large N mean field, what happens in the Kondo is somehow a Higgs mechanism where this phase here, right, this phase here of this B field basically is stuck, right? You just put it to the phase to zero, so this is just equal to one. And this would be the mean field theory of Kondo, and essentially the constraint is gone, in a certain sense, right? So this is something you would want to be a bit careful about because, you know, this object here carries, so this carries a U1 charge, this one carries also a U1 charge, and this carries also a U1 gauge charge, this carries a U1 gauge charge, and it also carries an electric charge. So when you put this thing here to one, then you have to decide what you're going to do with the gauge charge and the electric charge. And you know, if you read papers, then essentially what they will say is that this F electron acquires an electric charge, right? It loses its gauge charge, and basically it's an object which then participates in the Luttinger volume. That's what you say. Now numerically, of course, you can't do this, right? Because if I would like to calculate this B of R, even if I calculate correlation functions of this, because I have local U1 gauge symmetry, it will always be equal to zero. So what you have to do is to consider this composite object, right? So you can do this in the code. You calculate correlation functions of this F dagger and E to the I phi here. So this is an object which is gauge invariant and carries an electric charge, and we can do this, right? So this is the object I'm talking to you about. And this is, if you retrace your steps and go back to the operators, this is proportional to some object which is called a composite fermion, which we call a composite fermion, which is something, a complicated composite object of the spin 1/2 and the conduction electrons. But from the field theory, this is essentially this object here, which is the phase of the hybridization field times this fermion, which is a U1 gauge charge, okay? So we can go here about and calculate this. Actually, we haven't calculated this. We calculated this object here. And what Kondo is basically the emergence, if you want, of this composite object, right? So we have a new fermion which comes into play, which will participate in the Legendre volume, et cetera. So this is done, this is for the single impurity. You see that this is essentially the spectral function of this object. You get this Kondo resonance. And you can also play with this for a Kondo lattice. So this is a dense system. This is the only data I will show for dense systems. And this is the composite fermion spectral function as a function of temperature. And you see that if you cool the system, then you do get these poles here, right? Which are telling you that this object here, there's a composite, you know, there's a new quasi-particle, if you want, new particle, which comes into play and which will participate in the Legendre volume. It's interesting to see that if you calculate the same thing but for conduction electrons, then you have to look very carefully. You will see some very small spectral signature of this composite fermion, but if you're not very careful, you essentially won't see it. So the measuring this object here will give you a nice way of seeing you have a Kondo, or especially if you have a Kondo breakdown transition. So if you have a breakdown Kondo breakdown transition, you expect that this object, the pole in this object, will go away. So that's the way we think about Kondo these days. Okay. So let me go on and start with the first topic, which is Kondo breakdown transition and phases. And this is summarized in this paper. So I was telling you in the introduction right at the beginning. So this is the same model we have again with this spin chain on a metal. But what we will use is a semi-metal, right? So it's a Dirac system. So you can go and look and start at the decoupling fixed point. So put JK equals zero and look at the scaling dimension. The scaling dimension for the fermions is d divided by 2. The scaling dimension for the spin, right, is 1/2. And the Kondo term has, just do power counting, the Kondo term is irrelevant. Right? So you would expect that if I start with this and this, right, then this small JK would be irrelevant at this fixed point. And when JK gets big, right, when JK gets big, so you can go right to the limit JK goes to infinity, and then you will build some local Kondo singlets, and essentially, you know, each Kondo singlet captures one of the spin 1/2 electrons, and it's a stable phase of matter. Good. So Tarun and Matthias did an Espeland expansion. The Espeland expansion will reflect this, essentially, that if you go to second order, you will see that there is a Kondo breakdown critical point. On one side, you go to the decoupled chain, and on the other side, you go to a Kondo screen phase. Okay, so that's what we expect for these systems. And how do we see this numerically? So for numerically, what we do is to calculate spin-spin correlations. If you take a spin 1/2 chain, then the spin-spin correlations, they decay as 1 over r, and that's, you know, the 1 over r comes essentially from the SU2 symmetry of the spin chain. So if the spin chain remains decoupled, if you want, from the conduction electrons, then we should always see this 1 over r decay. And if we get to this Kondo phase, to this sort of Higgs mechanism, then the spin degree of freedom should, you know, acquire the decay of the conduction electrons. What we said before when we were looking at the field theory. So this is what this piece of data shows. At JK equals zero, this is, we have 42 system sizes, et cetera. We do beta L scaling, et cetera, because it's a conformal invariant, at least Lorentz invariant, hopefully. And so this is 1 over r, right? And then we go up to JK 1.5, we have 1 over r. If I get JK equals 2, it sort of falls down, and at JK equals 3, then this is consistent with 1 over r fourth, that would be what you get for Dirac fermions. So this is on the equal time. We can do dynamics with using, you know, analytical continuation. This is the two spin-on continuum at JK equals 0, JK equals 1.5. You know, this is Maxent. Talk to Anders. It's hard. Not for Anders. For me, it's hard. But we still see the two spin-on continuum. Right? And then if we go to JK equals 2 and JK equals 3, certainly we eat up some spectral weight here, and the spectral weight should not go to zero, but certainly some type of confinement of the spin-ons, at least in my language. So this is our data, which we claim where we see this Kondo breakdown transition. I was hoping to calculate this, this spin-on correlation function with this string. And I was hoping that this would go as 1 over R, but over lunch, Chong tell me that it's wrong, right? So, but the and so, okay, but we can still calculate this. My hope was that this would go as 1 over R, a power law in the deconfined phase, and it would acquire a mass in a, the confined phase, and maybe in 1D. That's not what you could expect. But in any case, what is also what you can see is that at large Kondo coupling, right, the spin would inherit the low energy properties of the conduction electrons, and this will give you this 1 over R to the fourth dk as large jk. Okay? So this is an interpretation. Just look, let's just look at the data. The last piece of evidence we have is essentially this, this composite fermion object, which essentially measures the, if you want a certain sense, the Higgs condensate. And at small jk, you will see that it's zero, so meaning that, you know, this is exactly the spectral function which the STM measures, right? So there's no current which can pass at zero bias voltage. There's no current which can pass from the tip to the cobalt atom to the surface, right? So there's a complete decoupling at low energies. And then at this JK more or less equals to 2, then this picks up, etc. So this gives us an idea that we really do have a Kondo breakdown type transition. Okay? So now let me move on. So this is the conclusion, right? So this is a simple model, right, where we do have a controlled, I think, pretty interesting phase transition where at this point here, some of the conduction electrons drop out of the Fermi surface, right? So we have to define, we can define precisely what the Fermi surface is. In the jargon of field theories, then this will be an FL star phase. And then there's no Higgs condensate. There's no Kondo here. There's a Higgs condensate. And here we have, so spinons are deconfined and spinons are confined. This is the way I understand it. Okay? Now let's move on to another case where we have this Fermi surface. And actually we started with this, right? But it turns out to be so complicated that, you know, we moved back we started then again to understand the semi-metal. Now, I'll try to tell you why it's so complicated. The strong coupling is the same, right? If you go to the strong coupling, you don't really care if you have a Dirac semi-metal or if you have a Fermi surface. That you don't care about. But at weak coupling, you do, right? And at weak coupling, to understand what happens, you can integrate out the electron. So this is perturbative. It's maybe not, it's just perturbative in JK. And you can ask yourself the question, well, you know, at the decoupled fixed point, what is the role? I mean, is this something which is relevant or not? So this is what you get when you integrate out the fermions. You get a retarded interaction between the spins. And then everything depends on the spin susceptibility of the host metal, which is this diamond Fermi surface. And if you place your chain in the X, so this is actually a fun problem. Depending on how you place your chain, then you will get different power laws. But if you place your chains in the x direction, the spin susceptibility as a function of space will decay as 1 over r to the 4. And they as a function of imaginary time, right, it will decay as 1 over tau squared. Now, it turns out that if you just do some power counting at the critical point, then at the Heisenberg critical point, then essentially you will see that this is marginal, so you don't really know what will happen. And this part, if you just look at space and time, this will not play, this will be irrelevant, but this coupling here will be marginal. So you don't really know what happens. And so this poses another question, which is a question of take a Heisenberg chain and you should couple each of your spin one halves to a dissipative bath. To a bath which is an ohmic bath. So it asks you the question of take a spin one half chain and add some dissipation, and the dissipation is ohmic. So each spin has its own bath. And it's an interesting problem because you will induce long range order in a non-trivial way, in my opinion. So this is work which was done with Manuel Weber, David Lewitz, and myself. Manuel has an amazing code which can treat spin correlation, spin models with retarded interactions, and it's a generalization of an SSC with retarded interaction. So you can go to very big systems at low temperatures. So let me start with the Hamiltonian formulation of this problem. This is then our spin chain, and we will couple our spin chain to a set of independent bosons, okay? So Qs are a number of bosons, and this is the energies of these Q bosons. The only thing which is important for this simulation is this path, basically the J of omega, which is, you know, given by the lambdas of Qs and omegas of Q, and it's ohmic. That means that it's proportional to omega. So why did I write this this for me as a Hamiltonian? Because you see that there's a conservation law, and a conservation law, and the conservation law is that of total angular momentum. This is the angular momentum of the boson, so that's an integer, plus the angular momentum of the spin, so it's a spin 1/2. So why is this interesting? It's interesting because if you just take one spin 1/2, then the total angular momentum will always be a half integer, meaning that a single bath cannot screen a spin, right? So it's very different than, you know, Kondo. There's no Kondo effect in this dissipation, right? So the only thing which can happen is a spin will stay, the spin 1/2 will stay a spin 1/2. It will not be screened by the bath. And then the question is, what happens to this spin? So in this paper, we did a spin wave calculation, and in the spin wave calculation with the Ohmic bath, you see that it's the 1/s corrections don't destroy the order, right? So this is already one hint that you have that the magnetic ordering can be stabilized by an ohmic bath. So this is the numerics here is the numerics of Manuel numeric, and what this plots is a quantity which is called the correlation ratio, which, to the best of my knowledge, was introduced by Ribou. At least that's the first time I saw it. And essentially, this measures the correlation length divided by the length of the system to the squared, right? And it, you know, it goes to 1 in an ordered phase, it goes to 0 in a disordered phase, and at a critical point is an RG invariant quantity. This is this correlation ratio as a function of alpha. Alpha is the coupling to the ohmic bath. And if you're looking for a quantum phase transition, then you would look for a crossing. And so you can look at the crossing as a function of system size, and you see that this crossing is always going down to lower values of alpha, right? So it's sort of slipping away, right? And what you can do also is to look at this is another way of plotting the same data. This is data taken at zero temperature. Take 1/L here, and you look at the correlation ratio. And these lines are for different values of alpha. And what you would like to monitor is this minimum. So you see that all these lines, they first go down. You have the impression that you're going to a disordered state. And then there's a one length scale, if you want, where there's a turnover, and this goes up. Right? And you can monitor this minimum as a function of 1/α, and you will see that this diverges exponentially. So it tells you that in this system, right, if I give you an alpha, then you will at one point get to a system which is large enough so that you have the impression that you will generate long-range order. Okay, so that's the message of these plots. And the length scale is exponentially large in 1/α. Okay, so to summarize this is that, you know, okay, we have a one-dimensional chain, but we have long-range correlations, if you want, in the imaginary time, and they are slow enough so as to invalidate the prerequisites of the Merman-Wagner theorem to give you, which say that you should have no long-range order in this one-dimensional system. Okay, so we do have the possibility, if you want, of having long-range order in this one-dimensional system with dissipation. One more calculation, which we did with Bimla, is to, if you have the spin wave, in the spin wave calculation, you can calculate the dynamical spin structure factor, and what you will get is you get basically Landau damped Goldstone modes with a dynamical exponent of z equals 2. So that would be typically what we would expect in the Monte Carlo for the dynamical spin structure factor, so this sort of squared dispersion relation at low energies. Okay, so this is the background, and because of this background, we claim that we have dissipation and Kondo singlet formation compete, and so at low jk we would have an ordered state, at large jk we would have a Kondo screened state, and of course everything is going to be rather hard because now we go to fermions, right? And fermions where if you do spins, then these are order n algorithms. If you do fermions and you have volume to the cube, it's much heavier actually. So we're limited by our system size. And so there's a bit of guesswork happening here of what really happens in this fermion system. But so this is what we have: the free energy divided d of f of g of jk This is the second derivative, so we have a phase transition more or less at jk equals 2. We look again at this, at jk equals 2, we can look at the spin correlation functions in imaginary time and in space, and we come to the conclusion that it's a z equals 2, somehow critical point, right? I mean, because the spin-spin correlation goes as 1 over square root of tau and in imaginary time and goes like 1 over r in real space, right? So it's consistent with a z equals 2 critical point. So we do a beta L squared scaling, which is, of course, for us rather expensive, but we have to do it because we're away from Lorentz invariant symmetric points. And then what we have here is the correlation ratio, which I told you about before, and we do indeed seem to see a crossing at 2. Here it seems to go up, here, you know, crossing, and here it goes down. So this is the data we have for the moment for an order-disorder transition, although the order is not very clear because, you know, because the dissipation is marginal, right? So it's a very hard problem. Here is the dynamical spin structure factor. This is, our transition is more or less at J of K of 2.2 or something like that. And so this is, again, my two spin-on continuum. And this is the two spin-on continuum at high energies. You can still see it. But here you have this this squared mode, which we see as an indication of Landau-damped Goldstone modes. Right? So this is the data we have. Now, interestingly, we can ask also the question of what happens to the Kondo effect. Huh? Do we have some Kondo screening in this model or not? And so what we calculate here dynamical spin structure. I mean the Green's function, single particle Green's function of this composite fermion. And you will see here this is in the ordered phase, and we see that we have some low energy modes here, and this is also then in the Kondo's green phase that we have these low energy modes. So this is essentially this composite fermion object which is present and which we take as a sign, if you want, of the heavy fermion thing character, a formation. So we can also look at, as a function of temperature, essentially this is then the spectral function here integrated over all the k's at omega equals 0. And contrary to the other case, which I told you where we had a Kondo breakdown, we have here for all the j's, you know, from 0.5 to 2.5, as a function of temperature, this quantity seems to go to something constant, meaning that we don't have a Kondo breakdown. So this would be an example of a order-disorder transition in the background always of in a heavy fermion, in the sense that the Kondo screening is always present from low j's to high j's. Okay, so I think I'm doing absolutely great in time. The conclusions are the following. So we have these rather simple systems. I mean, simple in the sense that we can do some numerics on them without a sign problem. There are, you know, metal to metal transitions because of the dimensional mismatch. A one-dimensional spin chain cannot gap out if you want a two-dimensional Fermi surface. The way we do the Monte Carlo is through a U1 gauge theory, and so we can get a lot of insight, if you want, of the phases of Kondo systems from this mapping to the U1 gauge theory. And our two case studies was one with a full Fermi surface, and this gives us a dissipation versus Kondo and Kondo screening. And so we have here a system where we have Kondo screening, so this b is not equal to 0, so also this sort of Higgs phase, b is not equal to 0 on this side, but we have an order-disorder transition. And if we take the Dirac fermions instead of the full Fermi surface, then we have a Kondo breakdown transition where both the Higgs condensate is 0, there's no symmetry, global SU2 spin symmetry breaking, and on this side, the Higgs condensate is not equal to 0, and we also have no spin ordering. Okay, so thank you for your attention.
Thank you, Father. Do we have questions?
Oof.
Thanks.
That was...
You mentioned something about the Wilson 9 in the first part.
About the what?
Wilson 9.
Sorry?
Wilson 9. can I see in the first part you have you said there's something non-local which Chung said
what uh-huh. So okay, so about this you say. Well, about this one.
Yeah, what is it?
Well, okay, so maybe you should ask Chong or Jen, right? So my only point is that since we have, you know, the only point I wanted to make here is essentially, since you know, in the formulation of the condo we have, we essentially have access to a gauge to the gauge field, right? And so we can come up with it's very easy for us, if you want, to calculate this these type of correlation functions.
Yeah, yeah. So
and the question,
now in the case where JK is smaller than JKC, I think the phase can be viewed as a decoupled metal and SU2 level 1 CFT.
Right.
And this FA sector is in the SU2 level 1 CFT. In the language of CFT, what is this? Or in the language of just a spin 1/2 chain, what is this?
Actually, I don't have a good answer to that. Chong, do you have a good answer to that? I don't know. I mean, it's hard for me to come up with a it's hard for me to come up with a spin formulation of that object, I must admit, right?
I think Shailesh has a comment.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to bring this up during the discussion session, but maybe I can give you a sense of what confuses me from the other community.
Okay.
So I guess what you're starting, can we go back to the Hamiltonian?
Yeah, with pleasure.
The original Hamiltonian, not written in terms of A's, right? Just, yeah, this is the Hamiltonian. Yeah. So this seems like a Hamiltonian that has no knowledge of the A, right?
Of the A, yeah, exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
So, to me, it looks like you're introducing an A to sort of make S the spin out of some kind of a composite object of F's.
Exactly.
Right? And that's when you introduce an A.
That's exactly that. That's I agree.
So from our community, that's something that we do in CPN models. Right.
Right. Okay.
The CPN models are made out of basically spin models, and we introduce a U1 gauge field to sort of write it in a different way.
Right.
And I think we're doing something exactly the same here.
We're doing exactly the same thing.
So typically in those models, the A field is never a dynamical field. At least we have never seen that. And I know from your community, you insist that there will be phases where this A becomes dynamical. Is that what you're saying is happening here? Because that would be really interesting from our perspective.
Well, the A is...
Because A is the gauge field.
The gauge theory, it should be, I mean, at least, it should be dynamical. I mean, you should be, should pick up.
And so then there will be.
It should be dynamical. It's not.
There should be these non-local operators. And maybe this is all sort of related to the question that is being asked. So I don't quite see what is the physics of this Wilson line or the Wilson loop and things like that. Of course, you're in 2 plus 1D. So the question would be, if I do it in 3 plus 1D, do you expect the physics to emergent, you'll get an emergent photon field.
Yes, you should. I mean, you should. I mean, there is in 3 plus 1D, there are, for example, pyrochlor lattice spin models on the pyrochlor lattice, where you do have, I mean, exactly these type of theories which you can do, and then you would get you claim you could get a photon phase.
This also happen here, you think?
Well, you would have to do, in principle, in principle, it should be possible to get, right? So that's exactly the
Typically, that can happen if I put in this F mu nu term, right?
Right.
Some kind
of
Blackett term or something like that.
So this is, this is...
Strong coupling. This is, the way I call it, this is the strong coupling limit of that gauge theory. And so typically, things are always confined, so I'm sort of excited that there's a deconfinement point.
Well, I mean, all these F mu nu will be dynamically generated, right? So it's hard, no?
They will be confined, at least from the perspective of our, of course, others are welcome to comment on this, but this will be a strongly coupled gauge theory.
So, yeah.
And so, in that limit, typically everything is confined.
Well, it depends on the lattice. Of course, If you just take the spin system, forget about the fermion. Just think about the spin system. Then of course, if you put this on a square lattice, right? Then you will get a nice you will just get a Heisenberg model. There's no fractionalization. Depending on if you start and put Q terms or JQ like Anders does, then this would possibly be could deconfine them, right? So it depends on the terms you have. So maybe that a JQ model. But this is speculative. Maybe that a JQ model would be essentially take this field theory and add a flux term, right? That could be something which would be interesting to look at.
Okay.
Can I have a comment on what you said?
Sure.
I don't play basketball. I think here my favorite way of thinking about this is not to start from the lattice model and try to derive the effective gauge theory. Maybe another way of thinking about this is to first understand IR physics, the universal IR fixed point, and then think of the different UV regularizations of the IR fixed point. And here the statement is really saying the original lattice model in terms of the spins is one UV fixed point, is one UV regularization of that, and this gauge theory is another UV regularization of that. They may flow to the same IR fixed point. But it doesn't mean, so they may flow to the same IR fixed point. It doesn't mean one has to first, in the RG flow, it doesn't mean one has to first pass through the other. They can just meet at deep IR.
So there's no UV completion. Okay, we'll talk about it.
You have to throw this.
An experimental question. An experimental question.
Okay.
The same Kondo chain.
Yes.
Heisenberg chain with Kondo coupling. When you have an S-wave superconductivity, there are claims of Majorana modes at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And experimentally, like Princeton group has seen it. So what is your opinion about it? Have you thought about...
We've thought about this. We unfortunately get a sign problem. Mm-hmm. So it's a no-go for us. If you try to couple these, we don't know how to formulate it. Every formulation I tried, I understand it's a very interesting problem. Every time you try to put in some type of superconducting instability on the conduction electrons, you get into a sign problem. So we just don't know how to do it.
So can't you can't make definite statement.
Sorry? So
you
I can't make
a definite
no,
statement.
No, we're stuck. We're stuck there. We can't do,
I see.
Unfortunately.
Thank you.
Right. It's somehow a frustration of the continent. So we don't know how to do that for the moment.
I have a quick question, maybe it's just naive. Since you have fermions and you're in 2 plus 1, do you expect to see some sort of effective Chern-Simons term as well in your action? That would be the leading term in the effective gauge field action, I would have guessed.
I think in this theory, mass is symmetrical.
Well, but he has masses and things, so parity anomaly, I would have guessed.
So we have 4 two-component fermions.
So you have you have a parity invariant mass.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I get. Okay.
I can't see you guys.
Any other questions? Sorry, was there something there?
Well, Shailesh is asking the questions.
They don't seem to be.
Should I look at you? I should know.
I check. If there's nothing in the chat, then we should.
Okay. There's nothing in the chat.
Nothing in chat.
Well, thank you very much, Fakir.
Okay.